and welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode 433. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here in a mild, a very warm Louisville, Kentucky. We actually broke a temperature for January, or for February, a warm temperature record today. So that makes me very happy. And but this is a Monday night show. We have the USS Negative Positives over the last couple months has taken on some water, and we had to get on the boat and the whole crew and do some maintenance because you know these decks have gotten dirty, and so we had to get on here and swab our decks really good and get them nice and clean again, and so we have the whole gang is sailing aboard the USS Negative Positives again, and let's find out who these co-captains are that's joining me here tonight. We'll start out in La La Land, Los Angeles, California, the City of Angels. How you doing tonight, Andre?
I am doing well. It is a rainy little day today in LA, so I'm listening to the pitter-patter of the rain outside and enjoying a conversation with my friends.
Oh, nice. Nice. sounded like either a late night classical music station DJ or one of those Loveline type DJs that's taking requests or something, but I'm not sure. But all right, let's get on out to our other Californian out there in Pee-wee Valley, California. That is Mrs. Roxana Angles. How are you doing tonight, Roxana?
I am doing so much better now that I'm talking to all y'all. I've missed you guys. So it's nice. It's actually not sweater weather here at all. Wearing sundresses out in the desert. And but guess what? It's great weather for shooting.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on over to let's go to the peach. Is it the Peach State?
Oh, yeah. Every street's got peach in it somewhere. No street gets their own names around here.
Well, I mean, that's good because, you know, nothing excites me more than the peach emoji. And out in Georgia, IA, Mr. Mike Kukovica. How you doing tonight, Mike?
Hey Mike, I'm super thrilled to be together with the gang. Been missing you all, and we're talking. I love it. So I'm in a great mood. I'm in a great mood, and things are good around here too. It's still pretty chilly at night, but during the day it's been in like the 60s or so. So
yeah,
it's like one of those times where, you know, growing up in the north, in the winter, you knew you needed your coat, but like around here, I'm like, I guess I kind of take my coat in the morning, but then like I don't need it when I'm coming home. I put it on, I carry it. Deep thoughts, right? Real deep thoughts. But no, it's good. It's good. Everything's lovely, man.
Well, I've had this issue where like it's been quite warm here during the day as well. It gets a little chillier at nighttime, but when I get off work, you know, I come in, I'm like, oh man, it's a nice night. I'm gonna go out in the gutter man cave here in this garage, and I might be able to play a little guitar tonight because it's a warm night. My fingers are gonna be able to move. It ain't gonna be so cold out here that I won't be able to move my fingers, you know. And then I come in the cave, and just like a cave, it's literally 20 degrees colder inside this garage than it is outside. once this garage gets cold, it takes days for it to warm up, you know.
So yeah, definitely. Well, you got good insulation. Right, I guess that's a two-edged sword.
Apparently, it's I don't know, either that or there's evil spirits flying around in here. That's so I don't know, but all right, let's get out to Alabama, which I might have to say this just on Saturday, my Kentucky Wildcats took a little did a little. Little beatdown of the Alabama Crimson Tide on Saturday. So, but Mr. Billy Sanford, how you doing tonight, sir?
Doing very good. I'm more than okay with that result, I should say. like everyone else, happy to be here, happy to catch up. And as someone who's been on blood thinners now for the last 3 or 4 months, also happy to see it warming up.
Nice, nice.
Do you notice that makes a difference, Billy?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, you know, I guess the research maybe is not definitive on that. Mm-hmm. It's certainly what I've heard, and you know, I'm a person who runs a little cold anyway, so it hasn't helped. I'll say that.
You chose a wonderful time to come to Louisville, but I will say this: I'm going to subscribe to Billy's theory, because in the last couple years of my becoming an alcoholic, I'd say maybe that's why I hate winter so much now, because my blood is so thin from a Miller Lite. That must be it. So, that's why I can't tolerate winter anymore. So I'm going to go with your theory there, Billy. I think you're on something there. But
there you go.
All right. Well, that is the gang here that has set sail. And the Fearless crew. And so I guess we're going to do a little catch up, and because it's been a while. It's probably been, what was it? It was before Christmas, the last time we all got together. And so we just want to use this episode to catch up with what we've all been up to. So we're going to start out in Pee Wee Valley, California, with Roxanna Angles, and see what you've been up to. Roxanna, what's been going on since the last time we spoke?
Well, for any of the listeners that may be a little confused, I'm actually out in Indio.
Wait a minute. You mean I got your location wrong?
Maybe just a little bit.
Oh, okay.
A little bit, but that's okay. That's what happens.
Well, I usually nail it. So that's what's cracking me a little bit.
Every single time you do. Every single time. you know, out here in India, we're gearing up for the big festival, you know, and I have actually, before I even go into it, I have a big question for you guys, because I need help. I am going to be going to Coachella. You know that they don't allow cameras that are so-called professional that you can take off lenses. So I need help in picking out a good point and shoot. So, you know, think about that for a second, you know, what would be your recommendation? Because I have been waiting for you guys, just like with this burning question.
Oh, of man.
What would you guys take to the festival if you were me?
I feel like I should have the Grey Lab timer in here to get to buzz Andre when he.
Yes, there's the timer.
we'll give that some thought. Yeah, so
give it some thought.
Here's the problem now, Roxanna, is we're all gonna be in such deep thought on this, we're not gonna listen to anything you say for the next 5-10 minutes. So
I know, that's okay. you know, I've been pushing myself to shoot because I've been in a Polaroid type of a mood lately. But then I feel like my other film takes a back burner, so I have to push myself in that mode, because you know how Polaroid is. It's just it's addicting and it's expensive. But I've been trying to shoot more of it, because I like the vibe lately. I like the Polaroid vibe. As you guys know, I like doing the lifts with them. And, you know, that is one camera that I can take to the festival, but I do want to take a point and shoot. Mm-hmm. I've been working on cyanotypes. I've also been, the club at school I've grown by a couple of students. So that's really fun.
And nice.
Too. So I know everybody likes to hear about my club.
Yeah.
And I have this rad new student, who not new, but new to me. And he's super, super creative and is really wanting to start to shoot film. So I'm getting one of the cameras together for him. I think he wants to shoot primarily color, which is fine because I have color and black and white. So I'm pretty stoked. I'm stoked because it's another film shooter to add to our cult.
We need new people. We always need new people. So you're doing good work, Roxanne.
Just maybe don't serve Kool-Aid at the after school meeting.
Oh.
No, no great Kool-Aid.
Oh man.
Maybe just strawberry Kool-Aid. Well, you know, I try and recruit as many film shooters as possible. Everywhere I go, I'm like, yeah, so you shoot film? Why not? You should. Nice. So other than that, it's just, you know, shooting. I'm excited about the spring. So lots to come. So yeah, that's about it, you guys.
Awesome. You know? Well, you know, it's funny you brought up Polaroid because I I was going through my when Billy came to town. I was digging in my drawers and
no one felt a hand on their shoulder, did they?
Sorry. And as I was digging through my drawers, and I'm talking film drawers, you all, I don't know what where you all are coming up with these dirty minds here. I still have quite a bit of Polaroid. I got like 5-6 packs of Polaroid film left. Like two, I think there's like 3 black and white in there. And but what I have is, and I've shot one of the pink duochrome. I did shoot a pack of that last summer. But I have 2 packs of the blue, which I'm really excited about shooting. But have any of you shot the blue duochrome? Yeah. And is it like what? How do I make it look best? Because in my mind, I want it to be like just blues and blacks, you know, and like this really moody. But I don't know if I can pull that off, or do I need to maybe darken it a little bit on like the SX-70 or something if I shoot it in that, or should I just let it expose normally? Or because I can't remember what I did with the pink, but I had some mixed results with the pink one. But so I don't know if you guys have any experience on that. But
you know, I have some in my fridge and I have not shot it yet either. And you know, you just got to put it in and shoot. I say,
yeah, yeah,
you know, just got to do it. I'm saying that half to myself too.
Right, right. I think, and it's kind of the reason I haven't shot it is because in my mind I have some ideas I want to do with it, and it's almost like that one roll of infrared that's still in my freezer that I'm scared to shoot. Right. It's like it's kind of set there like that, and so I don't know. Kooks, have you shot the blue?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to hear what Roxanna was going to say because I figured it was going to be way more interesting than what I had to say about it. But
oh my God. Well, this is the problem is that I save all my favorites and then I'm not shooting it and I need to stop it. That's my New Year's resolution, you guys. I got to get out and shoot this stuff that I have in my fridge, like the infrared film, like the blue Polaroid. And you know what? You only live once. Like, you only have so many breaths. Got to go shoot it.
I totally agree with you, and especially where Polaroid comes in. I mean, I feel like Polaroid's like avocados, you know, that it doesn't last that long. You got to eat it when it's good and when it's fresh, you know. And I've shot 4 or 5 packs of the blue, so it's 600, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the first part. What I like are like really high contrast. Right. Mm-hmm. If it's all really bright, then it kind of gets washed out, which I suppose that's obvious to anybody. But like if you have a subject that's like good bright and good dark, and in my personal opinion, I would almost always turn it down a notch, you know, on that too, because when Polaroids are a little bit darker, they look more interesting in my in my humble opinion, because
well, see, I shot that pink on the beach, you know, and I did some portraits of my wife and my sons on with the pink, but it was, you know, it was kind of like beach lighting, and it did kind of come out a little washed out. You know, it was cool looking, but it was kind of, you know, washed a bit.
But although if it's a blue tone, you know, it's better than just being plain white, right? Like if it's the color and it's just blown skies, but that'd be my guess, is look for a good high contrast subject, some good darks and some good brights, and turn it down just a little bit. But I had a pack of pink too, and it was from years ago, and I had left it in the fridge for years, and it just didn't work very well either too. You know, I got some of the blobs and like the undeveloped stuff, and it was just like, oh, you idiot, you should have taken this out and shot it. And it ruined it right under next to my beer in the fridge. You know, my beer was moving a lot faster than the Polaroid was, but but I did that to myself too recently. I had forgot that I had a couple. I have a little box of them, and I have some I-Type stuff for the family Polaroid, and I've got some SX70, and I had forgot I had a couple packs of SX70 black and white in there, and it was like over a year since expiration, and it was knackered, and I was just like, you idiot. So mad at myself, because this stuff is so beautiful normally, but you know, it just doesn't get deep blacks. That's what I think, the older it gets, the black and white, it just loses that ability to get black. And the sepia is okay looking, the brownish is okay, but still. Anyhow, sorry.
I need to shoot. These Polaroid packs have been in my fridge for probably 2 years now. So I need to get them shot. I really at this point can't complain. Like, I can't be like, that Polaroid got me again. Their quality, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, that wouldn't completely be a fair thing to say, right?
No.
I am waiting for them to redo the pink, though, because I've never shot that. So I want them to redo that. It's my favorite color.
It's so cool, and it's so like it's beautiful, and it's so different, you know.
Yes.
I really love the yellow too. That has my heart. I love the yellow.
I did never shoot any of the yellow, but I did like the yellow with the black frames, because I felt like
And I have to admit, I got what is that first impression thing where you get locked in? But it was probably like in 2015, I think. We went home to Michigan, and we went down to Detroit, and we went to the Third Man record studio, or Third Man, what do you call it? But Jack White's place in downtown Detroit. And so they record on vinyl there, and they had a Polaroid original Spectra booth, photo booth. And it was Spectra yellow and black, you know, with the black around the edge. And it was like $4 a shot. And we bought a bunch of them, and I just love them. I just love them so much. So maybe that's what made me love the yellow. And I just, you know what I mean? But I don't care. I love it anyway. It doesn't matter how it happened.
I miss Spectra. I miss that.
Yeah.
I fell in love with that. That was one of the first Polaroids I shot when I got into film, was with the Spectra. So cool. And it was just so good.
Those only like rectangular integral.
And there was just something magic about the film too. I don't know. It was so good.
And the cameras were pretty cool too. Like the little almost clamshell like, but it was like, popped up in a way. Yeah. It was, but not like the monstrosity, like the, what do they call it? The whale and the frog or whatever, or what they call the big, Polaroid 600 cameras or whatever. The Spectras were sleeker looking, you know? Almost like not as sleek as an SX70, but they sort of had that same sort of vibe and more of a wedge kind of looking thing. But very cool. All right. Well, Kooks, what have you been up to, man?
Well, let's see. I got a couple things. Actually, I wrote a list down. Not that I'm going to bore you all to death with my list and like check it off or anything, but I didn't want to have my brain empty at the wrong time. This is the problem with being over 50. Even though I'm not that much over 50, there's a lot of times there's something I want to say and it's in my head and I just can't find it. And looking through the files and I just can't find it quick enough. So that's why I wrote a list. But as long as we're talking about SX70 stuff, did y'all see that that Mint? They came out with a new sensor for the SX70, whether it's their cameras or the normal one. They just put this out the other day. And what I really find interesting, and I'm not all that super scientific, or I'm not scientific at all, but one of the things that they said is it's got new electronics, and the lens over the top of it is a certain color. They didn't really say, but when you look at it, you can see it's kind of like rose colored, you know, not solid red, but it's definitely got a red tinge to it. And then they showed two pictures, one, you know, without their new sensor and one with, and the one was underexposed and dark, and the other one was flowers, right? And the other one was really, really pretty. And I started thinking, and they said something about it matches what the human eye sees better, and it prevents the camera from making mistakes with the exposure. And I started thinking, I wonder if that's what the problem is sometimes when you get underexposed. I mean, a lot of times with Polaroid, it's either blown out or it's really underexposed. But like in my experience, if you're relying on them to do the metering, it's mostly blown out is the problem. But I wonder if it's a lot of blue light that causes the problems for the sensor, right? Am I smart enough? Am I saying that right? Because red cuts out blue light. You know what I mean? And maybe they compensate for that with the electronics. And it's not solid red, but I don't know. I wonder about that. But I am going to send my SLR 670 to them and get that done. In fact, just before we recorded, I put in my repair thing and I got a printout. I'm going to mail it to them. And the other thing that they'll offer you, it's like $100 to have that done if you have one of their cameras. Maybe it's the same with other SX70s too. But then, you know, recently they just made an addition to the SX70 where it uses it has its own battery and it can use iType film. So they made a little bottom case of it just a little bit deeper and still got the tripod mount and everything, but you can use iType film. You don't have to have the battery. So
save money.
Which I mean that and the other cool part is like all the super cool limited edition stuff is all iType stuff. You know what I mean? It's like the David Bowie stuff they had. I mean, you know, like it, just all of those kinds of things. But I love this camera, and to think about it getting a little bit better is like even better. So
very cool.
So that's cool. And
we'll be looking forward to the mic. The Kooks review on that. Yeah.
Well, maybe Kooks next
corner.
That's right. I got to do another episode, but this one will probably be next year, right? Because it's got to go to some guy in like Portland and from Portland to Taiwan and then get fixed in Taiwan. And then I don't know how long to get back. So it's probably going to be a while,
insane.
I'm super excited, but like at the same time, I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to put this in a box to go halfway around the world again. Like it came all the way over there to here in the first place. You know what I mean? It's going to be three times back and forth. Right. But no, it's cool. And it got me thinking too, have you guys heard any or seen that more recent interview or read about it with Gary Ho, the guy from Mint Camera, about the Rolly 35 AF?
We're talking about it.
Yeah, so that's their Roxana. This would be the camera that you would love to have probably at the Coachella, right? Because it's you know what the Rolly 35 looks like, that super cool camera.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So Mint is their 35 millimeter film camera is basically a modern replication of that. So at least in looks. And, you know, one of the things that he talked a lot about it in this, about what they were trying to do in a couple things. And a couple things I picked up was, you know, that it's going to have a shutter and aperture combination the same way the SX70 does, which it kind of breaks my head a little bit, because I was talking to my buddy Charlie, because how in the world do you have the aperture and the shutter be the same? Like, what the F, like, you know what I mean? And like, I remember thinking like, how in the world did Polaroid pull that off in the 70s or 60s actually, when they were designing it, you know, with pencils and paper. And, but then Mint went and replicated it, or he didn't say that they replicated it. He just said that it's a combined shutter, aperture unit to keep it small. Which was pretty interesting to me too. And it's got autofocus. And they said it'll have a program mode, but also all the manual stuff. So us old diehard people can, you know, meter on your own all you want. And if you don't want to do that, you can put it in P and shoot away, and it should be good both ways. And the lens is glass. It's not plastic. It's all glass.
I'm surprised it would still work if you put it in pee, though, you know, because I mean, the urine you think would get in the seals.
A little corrosion in there. A little corrosion.
Interfere with the LIDAR.
Oh man, you don't want to LIDAR on your pee, man. That's those two things are mixed up. Sorry, I'm joking. But the cool thing about LIDAR was that was like they used that like on air-to-air missiles and stuff like in the late 70s, early 80s. So that was like Cold War stuff. And now we got it in our cameras. You know what I mean? Not like it's a war, but just like I guess it's more evidence that since the Cold War ended, you know, there's a lot less money being spent on that. And the people that make that stuff are going elsewhere to sell it.
Yeah.
Probably drones are a good example of that, but anyhow, so I don't want to beat that up, but I just think, and I do want to say one thing too, because you know, our whole community has been kind of beating a drum on, yeah, we need new cameras, we need brand new cameras from a manufacturer that's not Leica, you know, something ordinary people can afford. Well, hey people, guess what? This one for sure fits that. They're saying it's going to be between $600 and $800. I'm not saying that's nothing, and I'm not saying that everyone can afford it. I'm not sure I can afford it either. But if you can't afford it or you don't want to spend the money on it, don't you dare beat it up, okay? You know, this is the royal you and the royal we, okay, as the dude would say. But, you know, I mean, like, it makes me cringe a little bit because the idea that people are going to start ripping on this thing when that guy bet his entire company on it. You know what I mean? Like they said, if it doesn't work, they're gone, you know, that they won't be there. And that was another thing from that little article that I thought was pretty cool was that he said that they're not really in business only to turn a profit. He's like, basically they all want to have a job, but they want to invest the profits of the company into making new stuff. So really, you know, it is encouraging to think that any money that you spend with them is really going into the future of more cool stuff, you know? Sure. So yeah. It's like, I think that's pretty awesome. So anyhow,
like the philosophy of a certain Southern California based analog photography products company that I know.
Abso-freaking-lutely, man. Absolutely. So,
and you know, just on the topic of price, the thing is I feel like everybody kind of got a little spoiled during that time when we almost lost film and they were just like picking up cameras for nothing. But if you look around at just your basic, even your basic, let's just bring digital in, point and shoot camera.
Yeah.
Let's look at the price here, you know, and I don't think that it's that bad of an investment. It's an investment for sure. But I mean, sign me up.
Totally. Yeah. Well, compare that to like that new Fuji X100 they just came out with, right?
Right. Exactly.
And that thing's like $1,500 or $1,600 and people are in a frenzy over it. So it's even like way more than that on secondhand. But yeah, this thing is half that. And yeah, it doesn't have everything it does, but it's in the end, it could make the same picture. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
that's exciting.
Yeah, I'm totally fired up. And then the Pentax one's going to be coming behind that sometime too, hopefully. So it's like, this could be a really good year for film cameras, you know? So here, one of the other things I wrote on here, I want to ask you guys if you ever experienced this. Have you ever had someone you're going to take some pictures for them? For me, it was one of my colleagues. He's got a Beetle. He's got a cool Beetle, and I really like his Beetle because it's a blue collar Beetle. You know what I mean? It's like he rebuilt the engine himself. It's gorgeous. But the car is like, you know, it's a working man's car. It's a working, you know what I mean? It's a little bit beat up. It's nothing you're afraid to drive down a dirt road or in the rain. You know, so and I was like, he was like, yeah, would you want to take some pictures of this? I was like, hell yeah, I would, you know, like, come on. And then he's like, well, we want to he wanted to do it at this place called Stars Mill. And it was in that movie, Sweet Home Alabama. Right. With Reese Witherspoon. Yep, was that with that? Yeah. That one.
You have a baby in a bar.
Yeah. the part where with the guy's store where he sold his glass lightning sand stuff, that is that Stars Mill place. Apparently everyone in the world except for my family has had pictures taken of their family over there. at least if you live in Georgia. So, but he's like, well, I would love to have him over there. And so I'm like, oh man, I've never even been there. And then, so I'm like, okay, fine. And we go there and I'm less like, oh my God, where am I going to put this car? And so, cause I'm like, well, I got to come up with something in a hurry. But the thing was, the guy's car was like tan, you know, like almost a banana, like a dull banana color, you know. Mm-hmm. But then the dead grass and dirt road and trees. And I'm like, everything is the same color. And there's no filter in the world that's going to change this. Like, and this guy, I really like him. He's a really good guy. He's worked at the company nearly as almost the same time as I have. And so we never really talk that much at work. And so we're just both talking about work. And I'm like, and I absolutely was brought to the realization that I cannot chew gum and walk at the same time where photography is involved, because the pictures, I mean, some of the compositions were okay, but some weren't that really bothered me. And I missed focus on a lot of them. And I was just like, so mad. And so I came home because we did it in the morning. I came home, I developed the stuff and I scanned it on the next day on Sunday. And I was just like, these suck. Every single one of these suck. And maybe isn't it the worst? And, you know, because then you look at it and you're like, well, maybe not. Like, I got to give this guy something. Well, maybe this one isn't terrible. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's terrible. You know, it is. Okay. So. So anyhow, that's just, if you ever felt something like that, then you're not alone. And actually, I hope that you haven't, whoever is listening to this.
It happens though. You know, I feel like I'm there with you. I've had that happen and it sucks. And you're like, what can I do to these to make it? Can I crop it? Can I it's the worst.
I started thinking, what would I do if I was in the dark room? So I start getting out the brush and darkening stuff. And then there's halos and shit. And it was like, So we ended up with, I was like, hey, bro, I said, can we have a second chance at this? Actually, I did tell him I've never been there. I said, so if these suck, give me another chance. And I said that before we even went there, before that day. So I was like, hey, I wasn't kidding.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you could always come out, you know, like very professional in this way. You could be like, yeah, well, I mean, the problem is, man, it's like there's no contrast, man. It's like we got to wait for some of the contrast, the grass to turn green, and, you know, man, like, you know, you're not giving me a lot to work with here, brother.
Well, so I was like, what I really would like for that car, which I think would be perfect, even in black and white, would be like a red brick wall. Yeah. I think that would be really nice. Tan car, red brick wall. So I think I got a line on something like that. So
there you go.
So anyhow, and then one of the other things I wanted to tell you guys about was, and I don't know about you, but I kind of built C41 development up into like this big deal in my head where, have you ever done that to yourself where you turn something that can be simple into something complicated and more involved, and then it causes you to kind of avoid it a little bit.
That's every home improvement project I've ever tried to do in my life.
Well, yeah. Or it's like the cheap tripod syndrome, right? Which isn't exactly the same thing, but like if you get a tripod that's lousy, then you end up talking yourself out of ever using it, right? You know what I mean? But I guess my version of not really the same thing, but my version of making C41 into a big deal is I would always just save up a pile of it. And then I'd, you know, have six or seven rounds I'd have to do. And I'd just develop it all, take all day long, you know, and then I just toss the chemicals when I was done. Not toss them, recycle them, but still, you know what I mean? Dispose of them. And it's been bugging me for a while. And I really wanted to try to find a way to just be able to do one. So I did. And maybe everyone else in the world knows this and I'm just finally getting there myself, you know, but yeah, I saved some chemicals. And last week I did just one roll and it was pretty cool. And what I did for temp control is, and this ties into something else that I kind of like to try to encourage people to do if you're interested, and you might not want to, but you know, if you're developing film, and or if you have your own dark room, it starts to make sense to mix your own chemicals from powders, not every single one, but some things, especially because in terms of darkroom paper developer, you don't have to, if you to get a decent price, you end up having to buy like a giant tub of the stuff, but then you're trying to keep it from going bad, you know what I mean, and getting oxidized, so you have this game. But if you can mix your own as you need it, then you don't ever have to worry about it going bad, and it turns out to be a little bit cheaper. And the other thing is, most of the developers have a lot of similarities, but if you want to try a different developer, it's usually maybe one ingredient or like a little different mixture. So it gives you options to experiment without spending a lot of money either. And so if you're ever interested in doing that, really the only hardware that you need is like a scale. And it kind of, depending on what you want, you kind of need two scales. You need like one of those, as I've been told, one of those like drug dealer scales, the little tiny one.
Yeah, that won't get you on any list or anything.
No. As I've heard, that's what people use that for. There's the little ones. But then if you need like more, 20 or 50 grams or whatever, you kind of need something a little bit bigger. And then you have two scales. But the cool part is if you get the bigger scale, it'll serve as a postal scale too, if you want to mail stuff and like use a company like Pirate Ship or something. Cause sometimes that holds you back from setting up your own mail at home, doesn't it? Cause you don't know how much it weighs. Mm-hmm. So that's like a little added benefit outside of using it. So anyhow, but one of the things I ended up getting to help with that too is one of those magnetic stirrers, and it's also a heater. I know this is a really long lead in to say, instead of using a big like soup pot with a TCS in it, and I'm not knocking a TCS, but instead of doing that, like when you do a big round of C41 developing, I ended up getting like a 2-liter glass beaker that a 1-liter plastic jug sits right inside of, filled it up with water and just put it on and let it warm up. It warmed up in like no time. And then I could also put my tank right in that same thing. Oh. Actually, when I said it warmed up in no time, I also didn't remember that was the temperature was in Celsius, not Fahrenheit. So it took me a little while to bring it back down. So in some ways, it took me a little longer than it may have due to my own stupidity. But yeah, that was really cool. It was really cool to just, I shot a roll around the house, developed it and scanned it. And it was like, not a big deal. So I think I really want to keep, some C41 developer, and some Blix, but some developer around and just be able to, because most of us, right, if you want to shoot a roll of black and white, you just do and you develop it. It's not a big deal, right? You know, there's no stress behind that. It'd be cool to actually be able to do that with C41 too.
I have such a confession.
Go ahead, Roxana.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, but I'm listening to you with the C41, and I will tell you, I probably keep mine mixed for so long, way past what I should, and I develop over 30 rolls little by little with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it works for you all right?
Yeah.
This is the other problem that I talked to Andre about this too, about, economy. And like, I realized I was way, I'm not saying that you're on the long side, whatever, you use it more than me and it works for you, so that's fine. But I've definitely been on the opposite side where I'm probably tossing it way too soon.
I usually do 25 rows out of a kit. So I usually cut it off at 25, but I did take one kit to 35 just to see. And I was starting to see a little bit of, it could have been a little bit of color shift going on, but also the film was really old and kind of baked. So I really don't know, if it was the kit extinguishing or if the film was just kind of, kind of fried. But yeah, 25 is usually my average on one of those kits. But
so when you say 25 and Roxanne, when you say like 30, are you talking about, that's the number, but do you stretch it out over time, or are you talking about like 25 in one shot and just like, or maybe over 2 weeks or something, or are you talking about like months, kind of like keep, when I'm.
Yeah, I keep my chemicals for like a good 3 months, at least 4 months. And they're fine as long as it's not too hot. Like if I keep them in a cool place all mixed.
Okay.
They're fine. I mean, I keep them in like the dark bottles.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what I got. One of those black plastic ones and squeezed as much out of it as I could, you know, the air. Yeah.
That's exactly what I do. I keep it to the brim. I have it in those and mine last about 3 to 4 months. And I honestly don't even count how many rolls I do. I can just kind of tell. And I'm not a perfectionist with my film. You guys all know that. Like if it's like there's a little color shift, I'm like, okay, time to switch it out.
But even it's funny when you say a little color shift too, because still like sometimes I struggle so hard at like color balancing and stuff. Even like with Negative Lab Pro, I'm like, well, how the hell would it? I know if it was off a little bit, like I'm like nowhere. And I don't mean to like, you know what I mean? I was like, I'm trying to get in the ballpark, let alone coming around third base or whatever. But so yeah, well, that's good encouragement. I'm going to keep this one that I have then. I'm going to stretch it a little bit. Nice. And do that more. Maybe put a roll of color in like an everyday carry. So I
have some thoughts on this, given that my sample size is orders of magnitude more than you guys. And I say that with like, you know, as much humility as possible.
And the fact that you get people that are unhappy when they come flaming eyes at you, right? When something goes wrong. So
I'm getting the opposite end. It is absolutely possible for your chemistry to last that long, for you to be able to process, you know, more than the recommended number of rolls. Everything that you read in terms of like yield and usable life in the instruction manuals of your chemistry is like inherently conservative estimates on the part of the chemical manufacturers and the brands who market those at home kits. That's like the big old disclaimer there, right? There are a number of variables that can affect how long your chemistry will last. Contaminants from the water that you're using to mix, which is why I always encourage people to mix with distilled water.
Absolutely.
Premature oxidation from, you know, storing it in a bottle with a ton of air in there. So any kind of, you know, bottle where you can squeeze the sides or collapse it down if it's that kind of like accordion style to limit the amount of excess air, especially in the developer bottle. It doesn't matter as much for the Blix. Is a good idea, but beyond kind of some of these, you know, tips to sort of extend the life, what I really have been trying in the past couple of years to get across in pretty much any, you know, customer service situation that we come across in Cinisto when you know, people have gotten, you know, poor results, or when we're just talking about reusable at-home chemistry in general, is the concept of a snip test. We put out a YouTube video. I'm in that YouTube video. I wrote the script for it, but I also, you know, was in front of camera for portions of it. I won't kind of completely go into a whole summary because, you know, really the video does a much better, concise job of it. But you have to cut off the little curved leader of the 35 millimeter film in order to load your reels anyway. So yeah. You always have, you know, the materials right in front of you in order to conduct a snip test prior to your developing session. In fact, you can even, you know, have a little Ziploc bag where you store your little snippets of color negative or black and white in case you're processing 120, since you don't really have, you know, the option to cut off a piece of the 120 film. But all you're looking for is a light struck piece of film. So it doesn't matter if it's 120 or 35. You just need a piece of film that's been exposed to light to check whether or not your chemistry is going to be achieving the maximum density or Dmax of the film. That's a test of your developer. It's a really like hardcore, you know, yes or no test of, is my developer still strong enough to achieve maximum density? It's of course not as useful as, you know, processing an entirely other, you know, test roll of film that you carefully metered and everything and waiting for it to dry and scanning it to see, okay, you know, what do my negs look like? Any color shifting, stuff like that. But that's, you know, I dare say somewhat unreasonable of an expectation to have of people. But the same amount of time that it takes you to develop the role, you know, the amount of time that one developing session takes, if you were to just double that, you know, by doing one little snip test with the piece of film that you cut off of your 35 anyway, or the little piece that you saved from your last 35 session in your Ziploc bag when you're about to do your 120, it can be a huge relief, because if you don't get maximum density on that snippet, you know that your negatives are going to come out thin. If it comes out completely clear, you know that your developer is completely dead. So it's a foolproof way. All it takes is time. And I've been trying really hard to convince people that it's worth it. And all it takes is for you to screw up your developing once and have heard this before to be like, okay, yeah, I should do this more often. Best case scenario would be for you to do it prior to every session. But, you know, if you've mixed up your chemistry and you've been processing a bunch of film for a couple weeks and then you let it sit for like a month, I really don't think that there's, you know, an excuse not to do it, you know,
so
letting it sit for a while.
So circumcise your film, folks. That's the You're
doing it. but seriously, so a snip test, basically you're developing that leader.
Correct.
And just like you would, and you're looking to see if it comes out black. But see, I have a question, because I at least Mike and Andre, I was asking questions because in January I was in California. I had my family with me and we spent some time with Andre, and we also went to Disney and I shot a bunch of 35 millimeter color, and I was like, these are obviously very important to me. And I had some developer left over from December. And by the time I would have been able to develop that, it would have been like the beginning of February, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th, something like that. Maybe the week after, I can't remember. And I was asking Mike and Andre, I was like, what do you think? And yeah, the natural fallback is just to mix new chemistry, especially if it's something you can't live without, right? I mean, then you're not taking any chances. But around the same time, I did some research on snip tests. And I did watch yours again. I had watched that before, Andre. I watched it, and your recommendation of a snip test is basically the same process as developing it, the film, the same time, Blix, everything. Yeah. But there's some.
You don't have to do it in the tank. Like, you can do it in, like, I use these like 1,000 milliliter pitchers, to, you know, pour into my developing tank, because they've got like a nice little spout and I can measure the volume and stuff. So I will heat up the chemistry and just do it in there, just kind of swirling it around, because I don't like having to do it in my tank and then have to like dry the tank out and dry the reels.
Okay.
But you're just doing it in the same, you know, chemistry at the same temperature for the same amount of time as you're processing and checking it to look for D-max.
Because there's a few people out there that were saying that, you know, you can do it for a certain amount of time, 4 or 5 minutes or whatever, and see if it gets dark. And if it gets dark enough, then fine. And then their idea, or was it yours, of keeping them for that bottle of chemistry, right? Like each of your snip tests and seeing a progression of, okay, that's what the first round was. That was the second round. Maybe it's starting to get a little bit lighter. Cause you know, sometimes it's hard to tell max black, right? And anyone that's been in, you know, with paper, sometimes it's like you're looking at it and you're like, is that really all black or is it not quite? Or maybe that's just me. Maybe no one else has that, but so.
You can definitely keep them in, you know, keep track of them, put them on a light table and see how much light's coming through. It's pretty clear when it's not dense enough.
Okay.
And the main thing that, like, even when it's not dense enough, right, for you to end up with a roll of film that's a little thinner than you'd like and maybe a little tiny bit color shifted is not the end of the world, especially if you're scanning. Really what I'm trying to kind of get people to get to the point where they never screw something up beyond, you know, repair is the situation where your developer's dead.
Yeah.
Because with these processes, with black and white, with color negative, right? The Blix or the Fixer lasts freaking forever, you know, and it doesn't really oxidize the same way that the developer does. In fact, the Blix requires, you know, oxygen. You know, it's an oxidation process itself, as far as I know. And so the issue is not the Blix. Like, it's going to clear out any undeveloped, you know, silver in there. That's what it's designed to do. The issue is the developer. So if your developer is dead and you don't know it and you haven't tested, you only have yourself to blame. And I say that having screwed up so many of my own roles. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not calling anybody stupid. Right. I'm calling myself stupid for knowing that I have this option of doing a sniff test that only takes a few minutes, and I've recommended to so many people, and the times that I haven't done it, it's bitten me in the ass, and I've ruined my film, because when you pull that off of the reel and it's just clear acetate, no images, no edge printing, and your heart sinks, it's the worst feeling in the world.
I'm going to look at your video, Andre. I love it. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. but you know what's funny too is that in December I actually ran into some exhausted Blix, which it theoretically should last the longest of anything, right? And I had maybe it was 18 rolls that I had developed, but like there was three 135s were the end. Like I think I had like two rounds of 120 and then one round of 135. And when I took them out after they were Blix, they look funny on the back. And I remember talking to you. So they weren't fully, the Blix got exhausted. And the cool part is you can have a second chance at that. But then here's the PSA recommendation, and I'll make it instead of Andre doing it since he works for a company that sells stuff. Have another bag of Blix on hand in case that happens to you, because then you could just mix it up and re-Blix it and it's fine. But if you don't have that, then you got problems.
I'm going to go one further, you know, and obviously, right, I'm going to wear my bias on my sleeve that I work for Cinestill. We sell chemistry. We're, you know, invested in you buying more chemistry. But the same way that I kind of feel about, like, you know, Ilford selling paper and stuff like that, I want you to do things in the most efficient way possible, screw up the least, and I want you to buy a lot of chemistry in the long term. When it comes to at-home film processing, shit happens. People make mistakes. Sometimes it's important for you to kind of get this out by a certain deadline. Whenever you are placing another order for chemistry, it will be my recommendation for you to put two in the cart. Two C41 kits so that you always have an extra on hand in case you mess something up while mixing.
Well, my thought too, that's not a bad idea.
But my thought too, we don't sell the Blix on its own.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We sell the developer on its own because it lasts longer, both in terms of like yield, the number of rolls, and the amount of time
that
it can be alive. So rather than you buying up a bunch of kits and then having like a huge stack of like extra Blix that you're never going to, you know, use, which was the case with labs that were using our chemistry a few years ago. They were like, I have a tower in the corner of my lab of Blix that I'm never going to get through. but we offer the kit with the developer and the Blix, and then we offer the developer on its own.
See, that's what it was. So that's what I do. Whenever I get a kit, I get one thing, a developer to go with the kit.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking that at least two packs of developer can go, but I don't know, maybe if I learn to do some snip tests and take advice from Roxana, then I'll get a little more use out of my stuff. That's what I'm going to try to do.
Seriously, I'm the worst one to take advice from because I'm just like a experimental, like crazy person. So it's all good.
No, you're not good. I want to get more toward where you are, Roxana. I want to stop being analytical and like trying to like figure shit out and feel. That's what I'm trying to do.
Kooks
so
has got
to
stop being analytical.
I just have an attitude about the whole thing, so you know. If you want perfection, don't follow my lead.
Perfection and me do not fit in the same sentence. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, when I was a kid, I used to want to be I was kind of a perfectionist, but then I realized one day wanting perfection is putting your goals and your happiness completely out of your own control, because anyone else, something you can't control, can destroy perfection. But at least for yourself, if you strive for excellence, we can do that in every little thing we do, and we can try to get better, right? But perfection don't exist. So it's
people.
Yeah. So all right. Well, I realize, Mike, I've been going on and on. What's up?
Spoken like a true trainer educator.
So I realize I've been going on and on, Mike. So I should, but can I just say two little things, things?
We're almost an hour on this segment, and we have gotten way too educational for the show. And okay.
So here's something helpful, I think, and toward Roxana too. And that is, I recently sent out 3 cameras to get repaired, and I haven't gotten them all back yet. I haven't got any of them back yet, but I wanted to share what I think are going to be good positive. So I found a place in Illinois called Gary's Camera or Gary's Camera Repair, and they specialize in Canon series like AE1s, A1s, stuff like that. And yeah, so that's whenever I have a Canon A1 that locked up on me, and I've been meaning to get it fixed for a while, and I just hadn't. And I finally was like, you know what? I need to get this fixed. And it was $100. And the guy even put a new focusing screen in it. So again, I don't have it yet. I paid him. It's on its way back to me, but I'm pretty excited about that. Something a little bit more edge, maybe out there, not edge, but like, you know, rare, maybe not everyone has one, but the Kodak Retina cameras, they made some, and they were made in Germany. Uh-huh. Those things, not very many people actually service them, but recently there's a guy named Paul Barden up in Portland or somewhere around Portland, I think, or in Oregon for sure, that specializes only in those cameras. And I was really glad to find him, because a few years ago when I was in Germany, I found this Kodak Retina in Stuttgart, and it was cheap because like the slow shutter speeds didn't work. And it's not as cool looking as a Rolly 35, but it's essentially the same thing. It's a scale focus. It's a 2.8 lens Schneider, you know what I mean? And it's a folder, just a little thing. So I sent that to him, and I'm really looking forward to getting it back. And then the last one was, I have an XA2, which I really like. But recently it had been underexposing stuff. Cause that's the thing with XA, you have control over it. The XA2 is like a literal point and shoot, except that you can change the ISO. So you have a little influence, but like it had been underexposing and like rating the stuff, lower steps didn't seem to help. So it turns out that Mark Hama can fix that too. So the guy on the other side of Atlanta to me is got that thing, and he's fixing that for me. So if you got some cameras that need some love, I mean, yeah, it's not nothing. It costs a little bit of money to get them fixed, but man, put them back to work. There's people out there that can do it. So
nice. Roxana gave me, the first time she was on the show, after the show, she sent me as a gift a Kodak Retina, and it is sitting here staring at me right now, giving me a guilty look. And
it's a cool camera, and I tell you, man,
it's kind of giving me a sad eye because it's over.
It's a sad look. You need to use it.
I will.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful camera. Yeah.
So that guy can take care of for you. So nice. And then the last point, and then I'll shut up and give everyone a break. But I just wanted to say, on Instagram stories the other day, there is a guy on Instagram that goes by the name of Joe Pollock that gave us a shout out, or I should say the podcast, yeah, a shout out. And it sounds like he's starting from the beginning and going through.
Yeah, Joe actually did send one of the few people that sent in a solo show, a Lister Takeover.
Wait a second. Yep. I knew that sounded familiar.
Yep.
Knucklehead. Yeah. But the other part that actually tickled me a lot was he taped up and cardboarded up a room and was making some prints recently too. So I'm nice. Like, nice. Oh yeah. So just a little listener shout out that I wanted to do.
Yeah, Joe actually also, he sent me a couple copies of a zine that I talked about in the last solo show I put out from like his I thought I had it still written down on my list here. Anyway, he sent me a couple copies a couple copies of a zine, and I'm giving one away. And all you have to do, it's the Asheville Camera Club zine. And so all you have to do is send an email to negpositives@gmail.com. Put Asheville in the email and your address if you're in the USA, and you can be entered to win one of these extra copies of the Asheville Camera Club zine that Joe Pollock sent me. And so yeah, and Mark O'Brien from the FPP has some photos in there as well. So you know, those are some heavy hitters. And but I've looked at the scene; it's beautiful. So if you want to win a copy of the scene, send me an email, negpositives@gmail.com, and put Asheville in the email and your address if you're in the USA, and you'll be entered to win. We'll shake that box and draw a winner. And big thanks to Joe Pollock for sending me an extra copy to give away to one of the fine listeners here. So Joe's one of the good ones out there. So
and Joe, if you're listening to this, take my apology for forgetting that you sent in a call and we're doing that. Okay. Don't hold it against me.
All right, folks, we're going to come back and catch up with Andre and Billy Sanford and I and see what we've been up to. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back, folks. Folks, we are back from the break after some technical difficulties where I got to reset all my routers in the entire house and then get Skype loaded back up again. But we're going to cross our fingers that this is going to work out. So interwebs, so much fun. But we're going to continue our catch up, and I guess we'll start with let's go to Andre Dominguez. And Andre, what have you been up to lately?
Well, a few weeks ago, I did manage to get a little bit of a reunion with my good buddy, or our mutual good buddy between myself and Mr. Kukavica, Ryan Green, here in downtown LA. We went out for a little photo walk where he did a whole lot more shooting than I did, but we did get a chance to go to this like Valentine's Day themed little like art fair thingamajig. There were some people there writing like free, like giving out free haikus on typewriters. Some folks doing like little like custom Valentine's Day cards on these printing presses where you would kind of pick out what design you wanted, and they do the little press design, and then you could walk over that like freshly pressed Valentine's Day card to the typewriters and type out a little message to your loved ones. So we had a delightful little like analog afternoon together, and we're planning on doing some darkroom printing together very soon. So that was a lot of fun, man. It was cool to meet some of these people here in LA that, you know, have entire businesses around typewriters, of, you know, refurbishing them, servicing them, and selling them online. I managed to convince one of the guys, after showing him some pictures of the watchmaker friend of mine, to let me, you know, take a trip down there to, I think they're in Riverside, to do some photographing of their technicians working on some typewriters in black and white. So it should be pretty fun. You know, there's, together with the photos of my watchmaker friend and this, I think I actually could be, you know, verging on the beginning of a series or a long-term project on artisans that, you know, are somehow related to kind of old anachronistic crafts that are analog in nature. So
nice.
It was overall a great visit with him, you know, great to catch up. Ryan's always very inspiring when it comes to stuff like that, pushing me to actually do something with my photography.
sounds like a zine, maybe a possible zine, an Andre zine.
You know, could start off with a zine and maybe one day turn into something bigger, but definitely something cheap and easy that I can spit out on my HP Instant Ink printer to begin
there
with.
There you go.
It's a good start, at least.
Nice.
Ryan's awesome. And, you know, Roxanne, he's got a little tie-in to you through Brian in that Ryan's a filmmaker, too. He's directed a couple different movies. He did a documentary on, oh, my gosh. There is like a version of the Lakers that are little people. Maybe it's not Lakers, but like it's like a basketball. Oh shoot. Now I'm doing him a whole disservice bringing it up and not being able to finish it. But, but somehow someone in his family was a little person, right? If that's the right term, I don't want to offend anybody. But I think that's the right. But they had their own like league and stuff. And he did a documentary on that. And he did another documentary on some guys were driving like a Volkswagen bus back from the east to the west, and it broke down and they were trying to pick it up or whatever. And it sounds a little crazy. And then he also did one more recently. I don't think it's out yet, but you know, his project is the payphones of Los Angeles, right? The Instagram page. And he takes these pictures of all these payphones. And of course now they're like, you know, 2016, and then they're like 2021, and there's just like empty, you know, there's like four holes in the ground where the payphone used to be bolted down. But there's another guy called that goes by the name or a handle of Screwy Blooms out there in LA, and he, whatever you can find, like a decrepit phone booth, he like puts flowers and stuff and like kind of like turns them into like a piece of art, which is interesting. And I think he ended up filming kind of a documentary around that. So I know that Brian doesn't necessarily do documentaries, but the idea of, you know, that's a whole nother level. Like I always, people ask me if you ever take videos. I'm like, look, I struggle to tell a story with one frame, let alone thousands of them, like what he does and like what Ryan does. So
it's an art for sure.
Yeah, it definitely is. So, but yeah, but Ryan's great. I'm glad you got to hang out with him, Andre. That sounds awesome. And darkroom printing, oh my gosh, I don't know when I'm going to be out there next. And I'm definitely feeling the little bit of envy there. That sounds like a whole lot of good time.
Yeah, you know, it's been tricky at times to kind of get our schedules aligned because he's a busy dad. You know, all my darkroom printing friends are busy dads.
So well,
to you know, throw a dart at the calendar, you know, several weeks in advance.
Yeah. Well, I think he's more of a stay-at-home dad, and I think his wife is the person that goes out and works out in the world, and so I kind of envy that a little bit. I would have if our situation was different, I would have done that in a second. I would have done it in a second. I mean, I don't know if it would have been good for my daughter, but I sure would have loved it. but honestly, when you say trying to get your schedules lined up, that's legit. It's a thing.
Yep. So that was definitely cool. And then most recently, I celebrated a birthday, and on the day of just so happened to be
happy birthday, Mr. President.
I wondered if that was just you really badly singing, or if you were going for the Marilyn Monroe.
Nailed it.
Yep.
Yes, you did.
But anywho. On the day of, there just so happened to be a meetup of the Neighborhood Watch Club, which is one of the local LA-based watch meetup groups. It was actually a very interesting opportunity to go visit the workshops of J.N. Shapiro Watches out in Torrance, California. They're a pretty new outfit. I think they've only been around for around 5-6 years, but are putting out some extremely high quality, high end American timepieces. Their crew is mainly made up of like pretty young watchmakers. I think most of them are in their like, you know, mid-20s to mid-30s. Some of them, this is like their first watchmaking job out of watchmaking school. And in going to this event and kind of chatting up with a few of them, I noticed that one of the watchmakers had a Rolleiflex on his desk, and we ended up talking a lot about film and analog. He shot a little bit of CineStill, but I'm gonna hook him up with a little bit more of that. And as a continuation from my previous thing, when I mentioned about the folks over there at Typewriter Connection being interested in getting some free photos taken of them, several of the watchmakers expressed some interest in that as well. So kind of in the span of just a few short weeks, this idea has gained decent amount of steam to it in the form of several new potential subjects to photograph on black and white film, you know, and all stuff that I'm, you know, interested in, you know, watches, typewriters. I kind of want to find some other, I think maybe like a trio of different kinds of artisans would be good, but you know.
So one might say this has got your gears spinning, huh?
Yep.
What? What?
Very, very much so.
American watches. I like this. America. Mm-hmm.
All right. Made in America. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call them, you know, working man's watches. They price around 70 grand and up, but they are made in America.
Well, that's about what the pickup trucks I make cost. So, you know, you can get a pickup truck made here or watch, you know, whatever you like, I guess.
But isn't 70 grand on the low end for that, Mike? Isn't it crazy how much that trucks cost these days?
Henry Ford always said he wanted to pay his people enough to afford the vehicles they make. Well, I can't afford the ones we make anymore. So, all right, Andre, you got anything else, brother?
No, I mean, you know, I'm riding a wave of inspiration right now, and you know, we just hired somebody new at CineStill on my team, so you know, it's a good time. I'm enthusiastic, and I'm hoping that I don't, you know, fall off the horse here in the coming weeks, because I feel like this year could be a really exciting year analog photography wise. I think I ended last year not jaded, but kind of lukewarm on it overall. So hoping to ride this wave.
Hey, nice. Hey, let me ask you a question, man. How was Rochester in January?
Oh my goodness. Did I not talk about that?
Not here.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, I spent 2 weeks in Rochester, one of which was our CineStill Leadership Summit, you know, reviewing all the stuff from last year, setting some new goals and things like that. And then the second week was, you know, doing some product training with Lou, our community and content specialist, who's based out there in Rochester. I didn't do, like, you know, as many of the kind of touristy things. I kind of just sort of in my own free time got to know the city and walked around on my own. But one thing that was really cool about that trip was that we did get a kind of an unprecedented level of access of the finishing line at Kodak, where we got to see on a very special day where they were kind of, you know, fixing a lot of the machines, doing final testing, and they could have the lights on in a lot of rooms that traditionally are completely dark and, you know, just under the infrared goggles. You know, the whole start to finish process of the finishing side. And one thing that I thought was the coolest was I asked, you know, well, what happens to all the little, you know, oval shape or rounded rectangle shape, you know, perfs after they're punched out of the film? And they were like, oh, this isn't really something we show anybody. But they took us over to these huge hoppers of what they call fairy dust. And it's just these huge ass things of all the teeny tiny little, you know, perfs, and we got to kind of like stick our hands in it, and it kind of sticks to your hand like glitter. But a much easier to remove glitter if you think about like what the size of one perf is. But that was a process, you know, that I never really paid all that much attention to or realized how much of that you would actually have. And they do all the silver recovery because if you think about, you know, how much film is actually removed in the perfs, you want to get that silver back. You're not just throwing that away. So yeah, Rochester was great. I very much look forward to, you know, going there more often in the coming years when I am working remotely. The goal is that, you know, every time that the boys go for a production run, I tag along and get some time to do some in-person training with the Cinestill East folks, get them, you know, more knowledgeable about the products that we carry and, you know, get them excited. So yeah, looking forward to Rochester being, you know, another new little home for me.
Ah, oh, well, that's perfect. Huh?
Perfect. Yeah, I do think so. Thank you, Kooks, for the reminder. It'd been long enough where I could have sworn I'd already talked about it.
But you know what's funny about those perfs is that they're like a little thing, but like imagine the stress on making sure that that doesn't end up on the film. Like, so to punch the hole and have that stuff go away, not go, you know what I mean? It's probably like more complicated. Bad
type situation.
Hey, chance. Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. But no, seriously, right? And then, like you say at the end, like the amount of that has got to be giant. So that's cool, man. That's super cool.
I feel like if you take a portrait of Al Gore, they'll be hanging Chads. Oh man! All right, so Andre, is that is that all you got for us?
Now that is indeed all I got.
All right, well let's get to Billy Sanford. He visited the River City, Louisville, Kentucky, for Imaging USA, and I got the honor of meeting Billy and several other fine people of the film community, including Mr. Bill Manning from Studio C41, Mr. David Mahaly, the old camera guy, and his son, the young camera guy. And
that's right.
And but Billy, how is your I guess it's best to get your perspective, because I've lived here so long. I'm hardened to it. And I really shouldn't say I'm hardened, but on this podcast, I want to hear the outsider perspective of a visit to the Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, you especially maybe should avoid that terminology since y'all have a 30-foot gold dude showing his junk out on Main Street.
That is true. We do have that. Yeah.
Who's the guy?
It's like a big gigantic golden statue of like, it's like the Apollo statue. Is that right? I think it is.
Yeah, I think so.
From Greek literature.
Yeah, or is it David? Is it David or is it Apollo? I don't know which one it is, but it's like, you know, it's the guy. You know, he's standing there and his junk's there, you know, and it's the famous statue. And this is a gigantic three-story gold version of him. And it's right there on Main Street, right there close to the Louisville Slugger Bat Factory. So right. There's, you know, several swinging bats around that area.
Jeez. Oh, man.
Oh, no, it was great, though, of course. I got to see you, Mike, take pictures of a fire escape with an APS camera. So I feel like I checked off so many things off of the bucket list on that trip. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. I met them on Sunday for the photo walk, and I decided to be as stereotypical Mike as I could, and I brought I brought my Holga with the magic lens. I brought an APS camera, and in my bag I brought a Pentax SLR, but I never actually pulled the SLR out. I was too busy, shooting with the Holga and people were just, you know, let's just face it, people were enthralled at the APS camera, I mean, because naturally, I mean, it's the hottest trend in film photography. It's taken over the world by storm. So
that's right. A storm.
There was a guy there. I didn't get his name, but he had a gigantic, like almost like fisheye lens. And so he took a portrait of me holding the APS camera in my hands. And it's a little Kodak. So I guess a T100 or something. And this thing is like smaller than a deck of cards, right? So, but I'm assuming with that lens,
fisheye, yeah,
and as close as he got to it, either it looked like I had giant hands or, but the camera probably did look, pretty intimidating, you know, in that
fisheye
lens.
Yeah, man. Large and in charge, man.
That's right. That's right. But so I did take photos, and but it was APS and Hoga, which shouldn't really surprise anybody, I guess. But Billy, it was great to see I've been friends with Billy for a while and Bill Manning for a while and Dave Mahaly and it was just to see those people in person and it's funny, it's the first time I've met them in real life, but it's almost like it didn't feel like it was I felt like I already knew them, and
that's right.
Even though you've never met them in real life, you immediately it's not like you feel like you got to spend time to get to know them, I already know them, it was just really, it was fun. And, but I mean, there's something to be said to actually seeing people in person and like any photo walk, I think I managed to finish a roll in the Hoga and maybe a half roll of that APS. So I didn't shoot a ton because it was just too much. It was too much fun talking to these people, and we did kind of went in this one area. We took the photo walk up to this area called the Belvedere in Louisville, which you can kind of overlooks the river, overlooks like the Belle of Louisville, which is the steamboat here in Louisville. And then you can also see the whole city skyline behind you when you're on this kind of platform overlooking the river. And we ran into like the Kodak film walk people because Kodak was doing a film walk around the same time we were. And I managed to have a little chat with Tim Ryugo from Kodak. He's from Kodak Alaris. And he talked to him for a little bit, managed to sweet talk him enough to get a free roll of a gold 120 gold 200 120 film out of him. So and a tube of Kodak gold branded chapstick. So there you go.
There you go.
Which the way the wind was
make
blowing
you live
off that
shiny
river,
buddy.
Well, the way the wind was blowing off that river that day, it was drizzly and windy. Chapstick came in handy. It's a nice coconutty flavor. I didn't know that gold film tasted like coconut, but apparently it does. After the photo walk, we all went down to a little watering hole. I wanted to show them. We wanted to get some beers. And so I wanted to take them to a real Louisville institution, the Outlook Inn, which I used to work at and have spent way too much of my life inside that place. But it's a true neighborhood dive bar. And the odd thing was it was like the second to last weekend of NFL football. So it was way more crowded than I thought it would be because this place is not really a sports bar, but there was a lot of people there and I was expecting it to be a little more chill, but they had, since it was kind of gearing up for the Super Bowl, they were calling it Super Sunday, like SOUP, like soup. And so they had all the regulars of that establishment brought in different varieties of soup to sample. So yeah, there was bowls of soup to be had. I go to order a round. So like I got me Miller Lite, and I asked Billy what he wanted, and he said, he wanted the taste of freedom, so he got a Miller Lite.
Now, did you have his arm twisted up behind his back when he asked him what he wanted to drink?
Not at all.
and then Bill Manning, being a fancy lad, he got like a buttered rum thing or something like that. So,
if you're in Louisville, you got to get some bourbon, man, for crying out loud. Yeah, how can you not do that?
Yeah,
tone deaf. You're going to go to Milwaukee and ask for a Bud up there? I mean, give me a break. You're going to come to Atlanta and ask for a Pepsi? You can't do that. Come on.
That's a really good point. And I probably should have cried foul on that. But, I was trying to be a welcoming guest to the River City here. But the Outlook has a very fine bourbon selection as well. So we followed that up right across the street from there as a pizza place called DiOrio's Pizza. So we are Billy and I, what's the guy's name? Billy that was with Stephen
Wallace.
Yeah, he's also used to do Studio C41 podcast with Bill.
That name's familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing was, we were hanging for a bit. Until I didn't place it at first. And I was like, man, this guy's voice sounds familiar. Why can't I place who this guy is? And finally somebody says, like, oh yeah, I've heard you on Studio C41. And I'm like, oh, that's the guy. And I finally figured it out. But I'm sometimes a little slow on these things. But we went over there and had a pie. And it was a good time. So it was just great seeing those guys. And I had a blast. And it's funny. I was telling Andre, I think the night before, I'm so not in social situations much anymore. Like COVID really did me in. It really turned me into a hermit. And like, I sort of like, I mean, I knew I wanted to do it, but I was sort of like apprehensive. I was like, man, I don't know, man. I'm going to be around a bunch of people I don't really know. I'm going to know Billy and I'm going to know, but like groups of people I don't do that well with anymore. I'm not used to being around people that much and I'm becoming a hermit. And I was like,
a guy that plays in a band who like wants people to come and listen to what you're doing. Don't want to be around people.
It's been a while since I've done that too. So like, I just feel like I've gotten like a little bit, not social anxiety, but just used to just being by myself a lot, you know? But then once I got there, it ended up being a blast and I was so glad I went, even though I felt like sort of like strangely apprehensive the night before. But I don't know where that's coming from, but I've just noticed it's something that I've had in my life since COVID. And I think a lot of people were dealing with it, but I came around, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. And or my Converse Chuck Taylor All-Star straps, I guess. So it was great. I'm so glad, and I'm so glad that I didn't chicken out or something. I don't know. It's just a very weird thing I've noticed lately. But and it kind of taught me that, hey, I need to get back out in public again. It's time to live life again, and not to avoid social situations, because it's time to live life again,
That's so, right. What I can add about that too, I'll say, for the Imaging USA part, Bill Manning did a film class and I went to that. And so that was fun to get to see Bill kind of shine in that moment. That was fun. And of course, meeting Dave and his son on the walk and all of that. But what I would say about the last part there was, and thank you for taking us to some of your old local haunts and stomping grounds, but it was fun. It was fun for me as somebody who had listened to the podcast and then you and I becoming friends over, the last couple of years or whatever because when we first pulled up, of course, two of your former bandmates were standing outside.
Total random too. That it was not planned. Yeah. Yeah.
And they were obviously happy to see you, and gave you big hugs and big smiles when they saw you walking up. And it was fun for me to see you around people who know you outside of film photography, just, your friends and people who care about you. Like you said, you used to work in that bar. So mm-hmm. when we walked in and there was the big crowd there and all the soup and everything, but people were really happy to see you there. And it was great. I was as much as I was glad to have that weekend and enjoy film photography and meet everybody and the photo walk and all the fun we had. That was a little special moment for me, I think. Just enjoyed getting to see you in that element.
I totally staged all that. I had it all planned out.
you told them we were coming, right?
That's right. That's right. No, it was totally random. And to run into so many people I knew, because it's been a while since I've been to that bar. And it was I'm glad you said it, because I felt sort of bad, because, like, you know, I had to, you know, talk to them for a little bit, because, you know, I can't just, like, shun my friends or whatever. but I also didn't want to shun you all, because you guys are here visiting my town. So, like, it was a little, like, I was trying to balance it. And I was like, I don't want you guys to feel like I've deserted you or whatever. So, like, but it was fun. It was just it was good. Well, I appreciate you saying that. That's very, very nice of you to say. But they probably all immediately made fun of me after we left. So, you know, it's all good.
No, it was a great weekend, though, and appreciate you showing us around, for sure.
I wish we had, you know, maybe a little more time, you know, and the weather would have been nicer, would have been a little helpful too. But yeah, I think we made the most of the time we had, and it was awesome. And so I can't, kind of makes me looking forward to the first time I can, you know, kind of meet Kooks and Roxanna in real life, because, you know, I've got Andre and Billy off the checked off the list now. So two
well,
more
you're
to
gonna
go.
Have so. To come on over to the That's West right. Coast. We have the nice weather.
That's true. That's true. Well, I've always wanted to see Pee Wee Valley up close anyway. So, like,
you know, but, I'm like, man, I'm gonna drive up there, dude. I'm gonna drive up there, especially after, you know, I'll let you all know. I mean, you know how dumb I can be, and the best example is me not being able to read the calendar and thinking that I might have been able to go at the same time that Billy and everyone was up there, and I couldn't. And I, like, was to looking at picking out hotels and then going and talking to the wife about it. And I'm like, I'm an idiot. This is a week off. I can't do it. And I'm like, but I'm going to drive up there, dude. I want not too distant future. I want to drive up there for, you know, like, maybe go hang out on a Saturday or something. Not take a whole weekend or nothing, but it'd be great.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, we'll get something planned. Yeah. And maybe we'll we'll do a little photo walk. I just a couple of people here in Louisville that, you know, used to listen to the show, probably don't anymore, but
that'd be cool, man.
Private recruit them, but yeah.
I just think it'd be cool to go to that bar and the places that you like, you know, because it's cool to go to a place, but it's cool to go to a place and see it the way the locals see it, not the way the tourists see it.
Well, that's the thing about this place, and I knew it would be a good place to take everybody. I wish it wasn't quite as crowded as it was normally. It wouldn't have been, but it is definitely like a neighborhood, like, you know, dive bar. It's like the perfect,
the best.
Yeah, just the best. And so very, very cool. But besides that, I mean, that's a lot for me, because, you know, normally I have nothing to say in these segments. But Billy, you might have more than just coming to Louisville. You have anything else that you've been doing lately?
Graham, who many people listening may know from SETI 16, he sent me some of the Harman Phoenix film recently. So I've shot a roll of that now, hoping to get it developed very shortly to see how that turned out. But that was it, really, probably from a film photography standpoint, the only other sort of newsworthy thing, I would say.
Well, I did see that when you first got into Louisville, I think I was working that evening, but when you first got in, I think on that Saturday, you'd went out and shot a little bit on your own. And if I remember correctly, and you were shooting a Pentax and you shot a fire escape. And I was, let's just say, I was very proud. And
that's right.
So warm the cockles of your heart there, Mike.
That's right.
That's right. Well, I had to see what all the fuss was about. So I get it now. Absolutely.
Nice. All right. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and get out of here for this segment. We're going to have one more segment. It's going to be a quick one. And we've had some time, because God knows this podcast is already an hour and a half long. So we've had some time to think about this. Roxanna did pose a question to us, a challenge. And we're going to come back in this last segment and answer what we think would be the camera that she should take to the festival there in Pee Wee Valley, and the music festival. So why has the name escaped me? It's what's the name of the festival?
Coachella.
Coachella, right? Yeah. Yeah, Coachella. Is that, that's the one you're talking about, right, Roxanna?
Oh, yeah, Coachella.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to answer the Coachella camera challenge.
Yes.
And heck, Roxanna, you're one of the few people that they come to. You don't have to go to them. They're coming to you.
I can walk over there. It's like right on the next block.
Oh, that's awesome.
So cool. Awesome.
Well, yeah. So since we put that teaser out, that little cliffhanger, we'll come back. We'll take us a break and we'll come back and answer that question for Roxanne. We're going to give her all the best advice. So, but yeah, we'll take a break, folks, and we'll be right back. Folks, we're back for the final segment, and here is where we answer Roxanna's burning questions about the camera to take to a music festival in Pee-wee Valley, California. So we're going to start with I'm going to put Andre in the hot seat first. Andre, what camera would you take? Would you tell her to take?
My recommendation is going to be the very quirky Canon Multitele 35/60mm f3.5, a point-and-shoot autofocus camera that gives you the ability to shoot in either full-frame or half-frame mode, and has a, not a zoom, not a 35-260, a 35 or 60 millimeter selectable focal length peekaboo lens.
Peekaboo!
That sounds fun. Peekaboo.
All right.
Really interesting camera.
Kooks, what you got?
Well, actually, Roxanna, tell us what the rules are, because not everyone out there might know.
Okay, so the rules are, well, you cannot bring a professional, and they deem professional by you cannot take off the lens, like you can't unscrew the lens. So it has to be a fixed lens on the camera. And I prefer light because I'm going to be walking around the festival a lot. I don't want it to, you know, hurt my shoulder and break my back.
yeah. Well, you know what? You can never go wrong with like an Olympus XA or like an XA2 or XA3, although they're kind of outsized and the people want a lot of money for them these days. But one of the good cameras that I would recommend is like one of the Canonet, the Canonet QL. And then there's different ones. I think 17 is maybe the top one, because the 17, it's a 1.7 lens. I think they're all 40mm lenses, but they have like a QL19, a QL28, stuff like that, depending on the lens opening, or probably like the Olympus 35RC. But I think those things suffer from being expensive because everyone wants them too. But the ones that are not super expensive and cool that are similar, that have like a 40mm lens and that are rangefinder, is like Yashica had a little line. I think they had one that was called like a Lynx, I think. But the one that I have is a Minister D, which is a kind of a strange name. But it's a cool camera. And I will tell you, I mean, Leica's shutters and stuff are nice, but just the way this one, the shutter goes down and the sound it makes is really pleasing. It's really nice.
Nothing like a good shutter. Like seriously.
It
really is. It's like a good shutter. You have my heart.
I'm right there with you.
And Billy Sanford, what you got?
Yeah, I'll say this is a little bit out of my area of expertise, and I thought that Kooks was gonna steal mine. Uh-oh. Because I really don't know how well this would be for a music festival if your goal is to shoot like get some pictures of the band, but if you just want something to walk around in the crowd and get the vibe of the atmosphere of the festival, I'm going to go with the Olympus Trip, which I owned one. It does qualify for the criteria that it be something light. It has 40mm 2.8 I had one. I don't have it anymore, but just a super fun walking around camera. So even after the festival's over, I think you'd still enjoy having it and using it for other purposes.
I've seen it. Good looking.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with a Pentax, naturally. I have one of these. One of the Pentax models. You see them. Used to be seeing them pretty cheap in thrift stores a lot, but probably not anymore. But I don't know what they go for on the used market now. But one of the IQ Zooms. I think a zoom will be handy in that situation in case you do want to get some photos of the band and you can't quite get close enough. I think a little compact that has a zoom would be helpful with some fast film, because that zoom is going to be really slow as far as the aperture when you zoom it out. But and I also have some that are, some of those models are weatherproof. So if you do get some rain, or like you get the hippie guy in front of you dancing and his sweaty hair is throwing sweat off.
Well, they do spray some water at the Dew Lab, so I'm hoping not for the sweat, Mike. I don't want the sweat.
I don't know what it is. Me and my wife, every time we went to a concert, we had a string for a while where we would get like the hippie guy dancing in front of us, and his hair would at some point inevitably smack me in the face, and I'd be like,
flinging droplets of sweat on you. Oh, God.
All I can think of is Ben Stiller in that movie when he's playing basketball and the guy's the hypochondriac. Yeah. And that's his sweaty guy's stomach. He's like right up against the side of his face.
Keeps asking to put his shirt on. He won't do it yet.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah,
sweaty dreadlocks. I can't imagine smacking you in the face.
Oh, gosh. That's just. No, I don't want any of that. Thank you. But I will take all of those cameras. I that sounds like a fun deep dive I'm going to be going on eBay.
There you go. The Pentax IQ Zoom. They have a bunch of them. They had one that had a really long zoom lens on it too, and it was actually a pretty small camera. Some of them are a little bulky, but none of them weigh that much. So, but they're good cameras.
Was it, you know, I think you might have been gone when we were talking about it, but what was the camera that now my brain's empty. Someone help me out. That movie, 1 hour photo, that Robin Williams was using.
I don't know. I haven't thought about that. Yeah, that was a great movie, but I can't remember. He had a little compact though. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone was talking about that. Maybe it must have been a different podcast, but I thought maybe you might have known it. But yeah, so they were talking about that. All right. Sorry.
No, yeah. I love it. And, you know, if anybody out there has some good suggestions, go ahead and DM me. I would love to hear what everybody's thoughts. If you've taken a point and shoot out to any music festivals, I would love to know.
Another good thing about I'm going to one more spin on the Pentax before I let you guys go to bed. But the IQ Zoom, most of that range has really cool flash options on it that you don't see in a lot of compacts. Like if you can get close enough to the band, you can do the thing where the flash will shoot, but then you keep holding the button down and it stays in bulb mode. So you get the lights.
Oh, nice. Ooh, yeah.
That's cool.
You can freeze the subject and then the background, you can just streak it like crazy.
Yeah. You move the camera around and get the stage lights to kind of smear everywhere and stuff. So yeah, you can do some really cool stuff with the flash and bulb mode on that camera. So
nice.
I like that. All right. Well, now that we've solved all Roxana's problems.
I love you guys. I miss you so much. You always solve all my problems.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to go ahead and run on out of here. We don't have to give our socials. That'll be you can find all of us. You'll hear the socials in the closing music. We will be back when we feel like being back. That's our new schedule. you'll hear us. When we feel like it. And everybody, I guess, have a couple, two, three, four, five, six weeks until we see you again, and have a great time. We're going to get on out of here. I don't know how you all want to do this, but I'll just go ahead and say, everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool photos.
I don't know if that was cool or creepy. I don't know. It was
kind of creepy, but that's okay.
Kind of was. All right.
Yeah, folks. But it was, the intention was love, so it's got to come across right, right?
That's right. That's right. Right. Folks, take care. We will talk to you soon.
Bye.
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 I'm Roxana Angles, and you can find my photography on Instagram at RoxanaLog or my shadow account, Galanixor.
This is Andre Dominguez. You can see my photography at Andre on Film, periods in between. The more kind of personal, less artsy, fartsy stuff is at Andre.snapshots.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We really appreciate your time and your mental energy in listening to us. If you'd like to talk to me or if you'd like to take a look at my work, you can find me on Instagram at The Drunk Darkroom.
This is Billy Sanford, and you can find me on Instagram at B Sanford Jr.
I'm Mike Gutterman, and you can see my photography on Instagram at Gutterman Photo. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. That's negpositives@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photo Podcast Facebook group. We also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives. You can support this program on Ko-fi. That is ko-fi.com/negativepositives. You can get my music on Bandcamp. That is mikegutterman.bandcamp.com. Everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. A Gutterman Cave production!